This episode was brought to you in collaboration with the Female Founders Initiative, introducing our new monthly series. The Female Founders Initiative supports and empowers female entrepreneurs all over Switzerland through a variety of events, workshops, and activities. They've also compiled a map of all the female-led Swiss startups, which you can check out by visiting female-founders.ch.
Because it's the founders, essentially, the ones who are passionate and who have that personality to build things, who will keep building things, even if they fail the first few times. And if you don't support them, then how are they supposed to do that?
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. If you enjoy listening to our show, make sure to follow the podcast and leave a rating. And now, here's your host, Merle.
Hi, I'm Suya.
Hi, Merle.
I'm very happy to have you here on the other side of the Swisspreneur podcast. Usually you're sitting in my seat, so I'm very excited to have you here and to hear about your insights and your experiences and dive deeper with you in the next minutes. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here. And it's weird for sure to be sitting here. So now I understand. Well, Silvan sat here as well when I first interviewed him. But he did that like years later. So this is already like quick turnaround. But yeah, happy to be here.
That's a good, it's a strong learning curve then. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And so, yeah, you are the founder of the wellness and inner transformation app Anami, as well as the CTO and business partner of 33, which is a company that helps other companies with innovative product development by building AI-first applications. Before we go into 33 and the things that you're currently doing, I want to go a little bit back and understand more of where you're coming from, what you've been doing so far, and get to know you a bit personally, I would say. So your family is originally from India. Yes. You were born in the US, and then you basically moved back to India to do your bachelor's in computer science and engineering, and then moved back, basically, to the US for your master's degree in computer science with a focus on machine learning. Can you tell us what motivated you to move back to the US and maybe also why specifically UCLA?
Mm-hmm. So I've had, an interesting upbringing, like growing up in India, in Delhi, and then doing my bachelor's in another like smaller city. So while I was doing my bachelor's, I think it was already clear for me that I wanted to pursue higher studies as well. Like my entire family is quite academic, so we're full of like people with higher education degrees, doctors, lawyers, mm-hmm. engineers. So that's kind of where we hail from. And it was a given, right? It's like tradition that you
you have to.
that I will just like study. And I loved studying in general. Mm-hmm. So school was really like fun place for me. Academics was always fun to do. And in terms of like going to the US to pursue my master's was a choice because I knew like already, like my father having worked in Silicon Valley for several years, also my mother, that this was kind of like the mecca for technology. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to learn what's the latest going on, what are the advancements in, and also that time this was already like 15 years ago, mm-hmm. That there was these talks about, there's more going on in machine learning, there's data science as well. So I was curious to learn about that. And that wasn't something that was available in the curriculum in India, in the education system. So yeah, it was like set for me that I wanted to go abroad. And then during my third year in bachelor's, we get like 6 months, like a semester to do an internship. Mm-hmm. Where we can do projects and stuff like that. So that is the time actually that I applied at UCLA. I found out with my research about a professor there. And it was called the Complex Networks Lab at UCLA. And he was doing a lot of work in already in computer vision, and you know, he was building a platform. Actually, was I remember this like fashion related, where you can drag images and find related images for those clothes and stuff like that, and also other things. But it was interesting that, you know, he was doing something in this, which is a bit of a feminine topic. And this was, I mean, nowadays people have these tools available, but back then it was a new topic. Mm-hmm. So I applied for internship there and I got it. And then I worked on some cool topics. I also published research papers during that time. And cool. That's what helped me also to get into the master's program later on.
Okay. Have you been to Silicon Valley before?
Yeah, so I mean, I was born basically in Silicon Valley. that was my conception and inception into this world. So my parents were working there back when Silicon Valley was Silicon mm-hmm. Valley. So, you know, they were working at like Intel, and my dad was an electronics engineer. So it was the golden period when everyone was treated really well. So, you know, signing bonuses was, here's a car, you know, join our company.
Wow. And,
yeah. And my father, like, he, you know, bought a house in his late 20s already then. Mm-hmm. So it was a really good time for people who were, coming there to work, immigrants and such. And because he worked there for a really long time, I used to keep going also on summer holidays. So even after we moved back to India, he was still working there for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And so I was quite connected with the culture. In fact, like, my friends used to make fun of me back home in Delhi that I was a bit too American, like with my accent and some of the things I liked and all of that. So I would say I was always like connected to both cultures. It was just like coming back to a familiar place when I went again.
Like a home away from home.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Exactly.
That's very nice. And then after your master's, you joined the Amazon Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And you stayed there also for 3 years, so also quite some time. Can you tell us a bit about what you worked on during that time at Amazon?
Yes. Again, during the master's program, we also get some time to like do an internship. So that is the time like they had this recruiting in at the university campus. And I got into Amazon already then. Mm-hmm. For an internship. So Amazon Lab 126 is the one that is in Sunnyvale and Cupertino, so in the Bay Area. And that's also where I later on, they also then offered me full-time position after I graduated. So what they do there is like they basically build like all the cool hardware that we see and the software related to it. So I built like worked on the Alexa device that we all know today, and various applications for their Fire TV, Kindle mm-hmm. tablets. So yeah, it was different from like working at the headquarters, which was focused to everything else. So AWS, the e-commerce stuff. And this was like kind of like because they were also experimenting and building different like smart devices,
mm-hmm.
like what will be there in the future? How will these devices be connected to each other? So, and they would showcase, so that was the first place where they would showcase the next thing. So it was really cool to be in that office. It was rather small also, and quite warm and cozy, and we had a good team. So it was great fun to like learn all these things there.
It's great. I mean, that you were there at that time, and then, I mean, look how big it is today, and to know like, okay, that's what it looked like back then, and to see how it grew. I mean, that must be amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And also to just work with the people that I had in the team, like extremely experienced software developers, like that is the experience that laid a really strong foundation for me to like bringing mm-hmm. best practices into how to build like robust and scalable software products
mm-hmm.
Later on. So yeah, even though I didn't spend like more than a few years there, but it was like a great learning experience.
Mm, amazing. Yeah. And you just said it was like a good basis for what came later.
Yeah.
So let's talk about like your move to Switzerland. What happened? Why were you were in Silicon Valley thinking, oh, I should go to Switzerland?
Well, that was definitely not the thought that crossed my mind at all. So I mean, Switzerland was definitely not on my radar or mm-hmm. my map whatsoever. I mean, the only other time like I'd been to Switzerland, so back in 2012, I published, so when I was talking about, I was doing research work at UCLA during my internship. So I was still like a bachelor student. I wrote this research paper that got published in a nice Springer publication. And then I got invited to EPFL to present my research paper as a bachelor student. So that was like very unusual and unheard of. And the government of India also like supported that travel. So I got some, you know, extra cash to like go to Lausanne and present the paper. Cool. Yeah. And I felt really good about it because like when I was there, everyone thought that I'm at least a PhD or a postdoc. But I was super young. I was like at least 10, 15 years younger to these people. And, you know, presenting a paper there on stage was such a humbling and honoring experience. But that was my only touch base with Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And after that, I didn't like think about it. I didn't know much about it. And of course, like as an Indian, we grow up watching this Heidi cartoon. And that's what I knew about like Switzerland. So... But then, I mean, as I was working at Amazon, already I knew very early on that I won't be doing this for too long. Mm-hmm. So I was just drawn to do something like where I would have more impact.
Yeah.
And that had a little bit more like deeper meaning to me and connection to me. And after like a couple of years working at Amazon, I was like, okay, I know how it goes. I know like there's this career ladder. Like I also got promoted super quickly at Amazon. And so I know like, you know, where my life would go from there. Mm. And I don't like that. So I don't like to know like so much, okay, like this is now my life. Yeah. And, you know, there's a very typical way in which people live there and progress in their life. And I mean, to each their own, but for me, it was not something that aligned to me. And then from my network, somebody who had an IT services company in Switzerland, he got to know like what I was doing at Amazon, and he reached out to me. He was like, oh, I need some help with some data analytics topics, and I want to introduce this to Switzerland. So I had started just casually, informally consulting and helping him. Mm-hmm. And then after a certain point where, you know, and he had also offered that, you know, why don't you come and help, you know, take my company forward in Switzerland. And that time it was too early. Like I was still, I just like started Amazon. So I was like, no, I mean, why would I move to Switzerland? Like I was like, I don't know anything about this place. But then like a year or two later, when I was again thinking about this, I thought about him and I connected again with him. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to, I started to seriously consider like joining him in Switzerland. And I remember that I had told my boss at Amazon that I'm just going for like a weekend trip to New York or something. But I literally I took a flight from California to Zurich, 11-hour flight, just to attend one dinner where he was going to introduce me to like his clients and then fly back the same weekend just to get like a taste of, okay, what kind of work they do. And that kind of like set the whole thing in motion.
And that was already for Vicara?
Yes, that was Vicara Infotech. This was now... The company is no longer there, but this was the company that was catering to essentially building, like they were first doing business intelligence and data warehousing projects for Swiss banks. So Credit Suisse, UBS and the likes. And then we wanted to bring in more like big data and cloud technologies and cater to that to the customers. Mm-hmm. So that's for that purpose. Then I decided to move to Zurich. Yeah.
And was that like, was it the topics or the things that you were working on here at Vicara that you were like, okay, this is really something that I want to do now. This is super exciting to me. Or what then prompted you to say, okay, let's go in, let's go to the Heidi land.
Yes. So I was already thinking, okay, you know, I was thinking I will start an analytics company in India where I'll help the farmers in India to collect data that they have of the soil related to farming. And it's so funny that I was thinking this already, like, I don't know, so many years ago, and now people are actually building these things. But back then I was like, okay, how does one do this? You know, I had this idea. I was like, okay, but how would I do it? the phones are so old school and India is a chaotic place. Mm-hmm. I was like, working in India, I don't know if that's going to like suit me anymore. So I had these ideas and then I was like, let's get real. I mean, up until now, I've just been a software developer. All I know is how to code. I don't know how to run a business.
Yeah.
So when the founder and CEO of Vichara Vivek, when he approached me, what was exciting to me more than the topics was, first of all, I did get along well with him, and that he had basically a small business where I could learn how to run a business. So that was very interesting
to me. Yeah.
And the second thing was that he also had a presence in India. So they were outsourcing and doing a lot of work there. So I was like, oh, I get to also be more connected to India, learn like how things happen there as well as in Switzerland. So to me, it was very appealing, like just as an entrepreneur to learn all these skills of management, running business, catering to clients, you know, moving basically from a product company, Amazon, to a services business. So all of it was very new and something I had absolutely zero experience in. So it was all of that that was super interesting to me. Because the part about the tech, actually the first time I remember then when I did, I entered, I think it was UBS's offices, and I saw how old everything was. Like the laptops were like this old Windows laptops. I was still used to working at in, you know, Unix, Linux systems. And when I looked at, oh, this is how their application infrastructure is, it's so old school. At first, I was like, what did I just do? I was like, did I just go back to like the Stone Age? Like, I'm just coming from like Silicon Valley and doing this now. So that was, I would say, the least appealing part of it.
Yeah.
Other stuff was what was more interesting to me. Yeah.
That sounds great. I mean, but I can really see it, because you then obviously already had something in you where you were like, okay, I kind of want to do this on my own, but I feel like I need more skills. I need a set of skills that I can then apply. And this sounded like a perfect opportunity to go there, which brings me also to the next question. Like, where do you think does your like entrepreneurial drive actually come from?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this, and the funny thing is that, I mean, my family, like my immediate family, they're not really business owners, right? They so it wasn't something, although like in my relatives and stuff, I have seen like them dabbling with some stuff. Okay, we have like real estate we manage, but it wasn't really that I was exposed to like having seen like how businesses run. But I would say like it was more my personality and the kind of things that interest me. So like I said before, that I wasn't so interested in having this life cut out for me, like this, you know, cookie cutter, like this is lead your life like this. And it was more interesting for me to like challenge myself, do something out of my comfort zone. And I guess like then, you know, trying out different things. It wasn't like I just wanted to straight away jump into like starting my own business, but I was just like, two things drove me. One was that I need to be really connected to what I'm doing. And the second thing is that I want to be challenged and I want to grow and learn. So when those things came to me in this form, I liked the idea of it and I wanted to keep going. But yeah, I honestly, like other than that, I really don't know where where this entrepreneurial spirit comes from. Like, I have absolutely no idea.
And I mean, it's exactly what you say, right? You have to step out of your comfort zone all the time. You have to challenge. You don't even challenge yourself. You just get challenged by the environments that you're in and the ecosystem that you're in. And you have to grow. You have to grow your business. And you have to always go out there and show people the best version of what it is that you're doing. And that sounds...
Now that I hear you to say that, I think that, I mean, because you can also obviously be challenged in a corporate world environment, a work environment as well. But I think another thing that just came to me was that to have that sense of autonomy was also like important for me, that I want to have that freedom to like build the life that I want, create different ideas and things that I like. And naturally, because I'm also a creative person, like I do a lot of art on the side. So I think it just kind of connected, yeah, with the things that I like, and my personality aligns with it.
Yeah, it was a match made in heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Which then I guess also brought you to Anami. So yeah. You were working at Vichara, and then you said, "Okay, let's go away from this plan. Let's just throw it all. How do you say? Throw caution to the wind.
Yeah.
And start to build your own startup, which was in wellness and mindfulness.
Yes.
Can you tell us about, like, first of all, have you had experience in that field before? How did you come up with saying, okay, that's the industry I want to go into? Mm-hmm. And then this was the first time that you were founding your own business, right? So what was the process like of founding for the first time?
Yeah. So I was at Vichara. I worked there for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it was like all the things that I wanted to learn, like, you know, that how do I run a business? How do I manage all these people and do all those mm-hmm. things? I had learned those things. So I was seeing like how to do that. And running a small business is always chaotic. There are so many different challenges that also come in, and budgets are always tight. So all those things I'd seen. So having done then all these projects in the fintech world, again, like, you know, I learned so many new different things, mm-hmm. which was super cool. But there was again this like calling from inside that I want to do now something even more meaningful to me. And I had been personally quite involved or like engaged in these kinds of mindfulness mm-hmm. spiritual practices. It's been now over 10 years. So okay. More even. So like 12, 13 years probably. And that was something I got interested in because of like problems that I'd seen in my family mm-hmm. life, at home, my mother's health and so on. Mm-hmm. And just like noticing my own like mental health declining. So while I was like doing all these cool things professionally, personally, I was not doing so well.
Yeah.
And that was also another reason why I wanted to leave Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. because I was like not feeling it like that happy there in that mm-hmm. kind of environment. But it had also a lot to do with who I was inside. And so over the years, I've done quite a bit of like meditation, yogic practices, which helped me so much to get out of that funk that I was in. That then when COVID hit, so this was around, so I started with Vichara in 2017, like the summer of August of 2017, I moved to Zurich. Mm-hmm. And then around, March 2020 is when COVID hit. And already then, I had already a few months before considered that, you know, I don't want to keep doing this job mm-hmm. and I want to build something of my own. And the spiritual, like mindfulness topics were the ones that resonated with me the most. This friend of mine, who was also the co-founder of Anami, mm-hmm. he was also quite involved in both the technology aspect of things and also the mindfulness aspect of things. So I used to brainstorm ideas with him.
Okay.
And then when COVID hit, I had already started an Instagram account.
Yeah.
With a different name than Anami. And I was posting a lot of like mindfulness, meditation, yoga related posts, educational posts, mm-hmm. which had done really, really well during that time, because when that pandemic hit, a lot of people, including myself, were extremely petrified. Like, you know, what's going to happen? This was completely unforeseen. We had no clue, like, you know, are we all in danger? Are we going to die? And, you know, how to cope with this? So that Instagram account, like, really helped a lot of people to find some kind of solace in these turbulent times. And also, you know, I'd connected with a good friend of mine here who's a successful serial entrepreneur. And I was telling him that I don't know what I want to do after Vichara. Like, I was already in the process of interviewing with Google and Microsoft at that time.
Okay.
So I was in the middle of that. And then I told him my entire life story, where I went into more details about my whole mental health journey. And when he heard that, he was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you even applying to Google, Microsoft, all these companies? Like, you clearly are meant to do this.
Yeah.
And when he said that, and he's a very successful entrepreneur here. He was the founder of Ava, this fertility, mm-hmm. like wristband, Pascal Koenig. Mm-hmm. So when he said that, I was like, I mean, I didn't know anyone else who was successful, you know, startup owner. And him encouraging me to go on that path, I was like, the next day I was meditating. I woke up. I was like, this is it. I'm doing this. So yeah. I was like all in from then. And I already then had the idea. Like I was thinking about it for a while. And then actually, because I wanted to learn a bit more about like building like a product mm-hmm. startup, having then before worked in a services company, again, switching back to product, but mm-hmm. like really building it on my own. I applied and joined the Founders Institute chapter in Switzerland for a few months to, it's kind of like a mini MBA, but mm-hmm. for entrepreneurs. So it mm-hmm. like tells you everything that you need to know to build a startup. And that's how like the whole kind of process began.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you started brainstorming also with your friend mm-hmm. in the US, who was then also your co-founder.
Yeah.
And I mean, we know like the founding team is crucial for a success of a business. So can you dive a bit deeper into how did you know that then, okay, this person is also a good match to be a co-founder, although, or maybe because, he's remote? How did that work?
That's a good question, because I hadn't actually met him. I mean, I know him since we were very young, like since mm-hmm. we were like mid-teens, since high school. So we were sort of like good friends, but we hadn't like been in touch for a while. So on and off and so on. And I hadn't even met him like since 4 or 5 years in person even. But we had started connecting on the whole yoga and meditation topic again.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working also at Amazon. And he was a techie as well. So we were talking a lot about, you know, how do we as like people with a scientific background bring these kind of what people think are alternative esoteric topics into the forefront without being like thought of like as a hippie? Because when I talk about these things, even till date, people take it much more seriously than if somebody who's dressed differently, you know, talks about it, and they're like, oh, this person is just very different and they don't want to hear. So I was like, we have that power to bring these topics into the limelight in mm-hmm. a very new and interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
And with him, like, just because we had that good rapport already before, and we were both very mindful people because of the mindfulness practices we did. I felt like I could trust him and that it would work out. Obviously, it's always a bit of a gamble, but it did actually work out quite smoothly, having had that relationship with him from before.
Yeah. And then you two just organized yourself, because, I mean, there was time difference, obviously, and I don't know, talking to business partners or something. How did you manage that?
So, I mean, basically, because we're both techies, tech people are really good at like sitting behind their computer and doing things that they're supposed to do with minimal human interaction. It's like stereotyping and generalizing, but that's one of the, you know, personality traits that comes with being a software developer.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came to, okay, let's build this, we were really good at that.
Yeah.
But when it came to, how do we sell this? Mm-hmm. How do we market it? What's the business plan? That's where, you know, we were like, okay, we need a bit more help. We need support here. That's also why the Founders Institute was helpful. Mm-hmm. I also had a bunch of mentors throughout that time that helped me. And we were really good at like just organizing and structuring ourselves. Like we had a Jira, account, and we would distribute responsibilities. So it worked out pretty decently, I would say. Yeah.
And then through the Founders Institute, for example, you also got the skill set of how to sell it and how to manage to also get some tractions, I presume?
Yes. So, I mean, basically, there were things that everyone says, and for all the sort of new startup founders who are probably listening to this, there's a lot of advice that we get, right? Mm-hmm. And we know it because we're getting that advice that this is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But we still end up doing what we think is the right thing to do. And, and the thing is that there's no other way to learn.
Yeah.
So like, even though I knew, okay, there are these things that they're saying that I should do first, but I think that I should do these other things first.
Yeah.
And I, because I'm so convinced about it, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to fail at that. And then I'm going to learn and I'm going to mm-hmm. go back to taking that advice, mm-hmm. but not when I should be taking it, a bit later in the journey.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing was in terms of traction that because we had this platform out during these turbulent COVID times that, and we were offering essentially what the platform is, it's a recommendation and a matching platform. Mm-hmm. So you sign up, you answer some questions. Based on your answers, you get like matched to what kind of coach mm-hmm. or teacher in these alternative health space would be best suited for your needs.
Yeah.
And then you get rematched when you change your answers and, you know, there's follow-ups and so on. So because people couldn't travel and they couldn't go on retreats and you know, go mm-hmm. to like nice places in Bali and India or whatever, Mexico to like to do this stuff, it was already like getting traction because of that. Mm-hmm. And I had to do things that I wasn't naturally skilled at, like running online events, building up a community. I also sought help from other people who knew what to do in this space. So like I said, I had mentors mm-hmm. over the years. And I did like online digital ads, campaigning, mm-hmm. things like that. So I experimented with different things. And I learned a lot about different aspects of running this mm-hmm. kind of a business and like how to validate things, like not just assume, okay, this is what we should build, but like, is this actually what is helping people?
Yeah.
So that really did help us get like good traction at mm-hmm. a certain point and basically, you know, keep us motivated to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did you always have in mind that maybe at some point you want to sell the company?
Not really, no, because mm-hmm. this was something which was so close to like meaningful to me.
Yeah.
Like it was really nice for me. At one point, honestly, I had become a life coach, even though I was not like certified to do so. So I remember like there were customers and, you know, they're writing these super long passages of the problems that they have. Mm-hmm. And then I'm getting on calls with them, helping them, like, how do I like find you the right people to connect you with and so on. It was really touching to see that yeah. people were getting help that they needed. And that I could connect them to the right people. So it was just something so like impactful and meaningful that I didn't think that I wanted to sell this. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just something I thought, okay, I want to keep building this. I want to do more. I mean, I still have a bunch of ideas on different things. So yeah, that was kind of the direction that I wanted to take the company.
And then at what point, because I mean, that is at the end what happened actually, yeah. you sold it. When was that point where you thought like, okay, now it is a good time now to give it into somebody else's hands?
Yes. So I think about a year into officially we founded an AGE and I had like, I was basically doing this full time with like no income coming in either yeah. because this is a, you know, matchmaking sort of marketplace kind of platform. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough revenues coming in that I could fully like support myself off of this just yet.
Okay.
That was one idea that started coming into my head. And the second thing was the Swiss government wrote me a letter. So I work here on a B permit, which is a work yeah. permit, which essentially means that I can only live in Switzerland if I am lawfully, gainfully employed.
Mm-hmm.
And when they saw, okay, I started this company, they didn't look at it like that it's a tech company.
Okay.
So they thought that I've left all the tech stuff and now become like some kind of spiritual coach now. And that's what I'm doing. So they wrote me a letter. Actually, first they renewed my permit. So I was like, oh, okay, all's good. Because yeah. I had like spoken to immigration lawyers before and I did my research before I went all in into this.
Yeah.
So they renewed my permit. I went to India for a couple of months in the winter time. And then when I come back, I see there was a letter in the mailbox from them saying that what you're doing is not in alignment with your skill set. And if you don't get like a job in your area of expertise, you need to leave the country. And they gave me a year for it. So it was not like you need to leave the country now. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, you know, blank. And then I was, first I thought, okay, I mean, this is seems weird. I'm going to fight this and I'm going to try to like get them to understand this. So, I mean, and at this point, I had a couple of people like Pascal Koenig in my network who were willing to write a letter to them. I even wrote to the Swiss Startup Association. They also wrote a letter supporting me on this. But then they wanted, like the Swiss government wanted like a bunch of documents to prove like the business plan and everything to like see like what exactly I was going to build and stuff. And there was a whole big process to it. And then I looked at my bank account as well. And I was like, okay, do I want to do all this like paperwork, this headache to go through all this? Or maybe I can just get like a nice part-time job in the startup world where I can learn some stuff that I can apply as well to Anami, support myself financially while still run Anami and get the government off my back.
Yeah.
So that's then what I decided to do. And that's actually the story of how I joined 33. And while I was doing that and I joined 33 and, you know, I started working there, my focus shifted. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't easy to run two startups at the same time, of course. And also, you know, so then all the effort and the focus I needed to scale Anami was not getting put.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, I did start questioning, okay, like I'm not doing justice to this business. Mm-hmm. What should I do with it? Mm-hmm. And just when I had that thought of what should I do with it, these founders found me and they were like, oh, we are wanting to build exactly what you've built. Can we buy your company?
Okay.
So I was like, all right, divine intervention.
Yeah.
Sure. 6 months of conversation. And then I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Here you go.
And for your co-founder, that was also fine.
I mean, we had conversations about it. We also like put in a lot, like we had cycles where we really were like, okay, let's give this one final shot. Mm-hmm. Let's try to really put in our brains together and see if can we really do this. And as I mentioned before, like both my co-founder and I had very similar skill sets. Mm-hmm. So we're both techies. We know certain things really well and certain things we didn't know that well. And previously, I had also actually been actively looking for a third co-founder who could be having the sales and marketing skills to join the team, which I wasn't very successful in finding the right person. Mm. So when these two women approached me, who had exactly that, their skill set was the complete complement of ours. Mm. And then all the conversations we had with them, our values aligned, our vision and mission aligned. So I felt like I just wanted what I had built to be bigger and to really help people. And for me, it was no longer important if I'm the one running it or if I'm just helping somebody else run it who could do this better. Mm-hmm. And when I found those people, I was like, you know, this is for the good of the company.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what we did.
This episode was brought to you by Google Cloud, a partner that needs no introduction. What you might not have heard of, though, is that Google offers a Google for Startups cloud program where they give you access to startup experts, technical training, business support, and cover your Google Cloud costs up to $200,000 for 2 years, or even $350,000 if you're an AI startup. Scale your startup faster and smarter with Google Cloud. Head over to goo.gle/Swisspreneur.
That's a so the your paths aligned.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
That's great. And but you're still you still have a role in it. You can still
yes. So yeah. I'm a technical advisor in the company. Still have like minority shareholding in it. Mm-hmm. And the company's rebranded. It's called Here Now. Mm-hmm. And the founders, like they're amazing women. They have a really good background in branding and marketing and sales. And there's going to be a lot more we'll see of Here Now in the coming months.
Nice.
In the press and all that as well. So we're going to be launching a new platform and hopefully see like great things come out of it.
But that's wonderful. In that sense, you were able to keep on following also your vision for the company and shaping it.
Yeah, exactly. I really like helping them out. And I still love like the mission behind it and the vision behind it. So
yeah,
it just made sense to do it in this way.
That's great. I guess it doesn't happen like this for everyone, obviously. But it sounds like I think also you mentioned a few things that are very important is to understand. Okay, I built this up. I kind of grew this company. The people that I'm giving it to, do they share my values?
Yes,
you said definitely. Vision, mission.
Yeah.
These are very important things. And
exactly. Yeah. I mean, there were also a couple of other people who had approached us before as well, who wanted to join hands and so on. And it was very important to us that, you know, it's the right people. They see the value. They all, and we all shared the kind of the same the same values, as I mentioned, that were aligned. And luckily, I've been quite lucky in this space, like that all the people that I've like partnered up with, that alignment has been there.
Mm.
So that's always been like very important for me. So it's like if you have the right people and the right team, like working together, then you can build great things.
Yeah.
But that connection and alignment has to be there.
Yeah. And talking about building things, smooth transition now. We now mark the year 2022, I think, which is when you joined 33.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a bit, like you already mentioned, okay, I had to look for a job and then I joined 33. But how did that actually happen?
So that's the story of that is also very well tied with Swisspreneur.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also like, as we mentioned, a podcast host here after Sylvan. So what happened was I was like, when I thought, okay, I need to, you know, look for a part-time job. It would be very cool to do it for the startup where I can, you know, learn more things that are in alignment with what I'm already doing. I thought that, okay, it would take like 2-3 months to find a job. You know, it's probably typical like that in Switzerland. So I'd done some research and I found out from my research about Swisspreneur that it had this community, the Slack community, where, you know, I was like, that could be a good place to find other startup founders. And then when I went on the Swisspreneur website, I saw Pascal Koenig, the person I spoke of.
Yeah.
He does an investment masterclass on Swisspreneur as well. So then I saw, okay, Pascal knows Sylvan, who's running Swisspreneur. So I wrote an email to Swisspreneur, which incidentally reached Sylvan, asking to help me like connect with other startup founders that could essentially use somebody like me in their company to help them out. So he spread the word. And that's how the 33 founders back then contacted me. And within a couple of weeks, I joined the company.
And did you at the same time also join as a host at Swisspreneur?
It came a bit later.
Yeah,
so
how did that happen?
then Sylvan and I started we started talking and exchanging like thoughts and ideas. And I was checking out the Swisspreneur website and being the techie that I was like, oh, there's a bug in the filter and search and this and that. So I wrote like these things to I think Lars or Sylvan, like that you guys could do this or you guys could do that. So that was just like me, like, you know, like exchanging with them because he helped me out and I was helping him out a bit. And then one evening, like Sylvan and I had just gone out for dinner. And then out of the blue, he had asked me if I wanted to join as a podcast host.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about it and I thought it was like a super cool opportunity. So I joined, I think like about 6-7 months after I joined 33, I also joined Swisspreneur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what has it been like to interview all these entrepreneurs?
It's been fabulous. Like, so I mean, I did a little bit of podcasting for Anami as well. Mm-hmm. So that was also part of the whole effort of like building the community and stuff. I did some events before online and I did a little bit of podcasting. And prior to that, I was always like very comfortable, like talking on stage. I did that a bit as well in school and stuff. So when I was like interviewing, and I also started doing live interviews at events for Swisspreneur, it was really cool to learn actually from all these entrepreneurs and investors sitting across the table.
Mm.
And for me, it was again like, you know, just extra mentorship that was coming in the form of interviewing people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been great. Like just learning everyone's different life stories, like their skill sets, experiences. It's just really added a lot to my life.
And probably also, I mean, you're a CTO at 33, and I presume also by learning from all these people also has shaped you and how you manage maybe your work and your team and this company.
Definitely. I think the good thing about like being here in Zurich is that it's such a small community that after a certain point, like everyone knows everybody and people are really helpful here.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not always just helping you just to see, oh, what can we get in return if we help her? Rather, that's rarely the case.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience, it was always like, you know, people are super open to help you out, like give you free advice or connect you with the right people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was this kind of ecosystem was really like supporting. And I was doing then the same thing for other people as well. And it helped me so much like to overcome all the obstacles and challenges that we also saw at 33 over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I could easily go to like still Sylvan or Pascal with advice on this matter or that matter. And, it's great. It's I love the community aspect of it the most.
Yep.
Yeah.
And talking about like obstacles at 33, because we know that you have different offices in different countries and then obviously different workflows and cultures all coming together at once. How do you manage that? How do you handle that?
Yeah, that was very, very interesting. I mean, I already have like a multicultural background. So, you know, having grown up like in India and the US and then working in the US, when I came to Switzerland, it was another like, okay, third culture added to it.
Yeah.
And bringing in all my American ways was not really fitting.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn to be like more polite, a little bit more diplomatic, a little bit more considerate, not so in your face, like direct. Because I am naturally quite direct. So I was like, let's tone it down. Like, you know, maybe people are getting like offended or like triggered. And so I had to learn that first of all be a bit more sweet and stuff like that. And then we have like offices, at 33 in Mexico and Poland. And then because of me, we started like doing a lot and leveraging the engineering talent and AI talent in India as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a lot because we had, when I joined 33, we had primarily all the people, engineering, project management, design, working in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And I could already see that was a mess because we had like Swiss founders. So at this time, I'm not like a partner in the company. Mm-hmm. I'm just this like technical head of the company. And I could see that it's not working, right? Like there is the Swiss management trying to manage like Polish people and the cultures are so divergent.
Yeah.
It was a bit chaotic. So like really going in and understanding, like naturally, I think I also have this interest in like understanding people, how they think, why they do what they do, how they do it. So that I guess natural interest also helped in like cleaning up the mess that was there. And then bringing in Indian people, managing them, like that's a whole different other story. That was another angle added to it. But was it's always fun, like working in such environments. Like it's there's never a dull moment and you're never bored at work. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And so tell us actually a bit more about what the company actually does and maybe also where you see your competitive advantage in the market.
Yeah. So, I mean, the company was founded in 2019. Mm-hmm. And it was started like basically to meet the needs that the typical sort of software agencies don't meet these days.
Okay.
And what we do now, like, because we, you know, molded and shaped the company in a way that we want to bring innovation to other like startups, small, medium businesses, and so on, which they cannot easily do on their own. Mm-hmm. So if you would go to a typical software agency and you're like, just build me this app, they would just go and build it for you and you would outsource it, they'd try to build it in the cheapest way. Probably the quality is not that great. And after some time, you have to rebuild the whole thing. Mm-hmm. This is a very typical scenario that happens when people try to outsource and save money and so on. And so what we do is one is that if smaller businesses come to us with an idea, we first help them to validate the idea. So go out, like do market research, user research. Is this idea worth building? Mm-hmm. Once we've helped them validate that, then we advise on how to build it. So it's not necessary that you have to now go and build the fanciest thing.
Yeah.
So all of these things that we were doing was also helping me, like in Adanami as well, when I, you know, compare the two things. Mm-hmm. And because we did end up building the fanciest thing, being techies at Anami, right? And now I'm like looking back, I would never do it like that. What we did then. So there are different ways in which you can leverage technology because there's so many like open source tools out there and now with AI.
Yeah.
So that's what we do really well. So we help companies to build things smartly. Mm-hmm. And leverage all those tools and technologies that are out there. The other thing that we help companies do is to bring more AI into their products. Me having a background in machine learning, and also that's what I've been working on for the past year, and rather 2 years, is setting up this like AI hub in India and leveraging that talent. So now with the blow up of generative AI and large language models, we're helping in various industries, fintech, of course, because I did work quite a bit in that area when I moved here to Switzerland. Then also legal tech, health tech and pharma. So in different domains, like how do you leverage the power of AI to boost your product that can then help you also generate more business, manage your customers better, manage your data better. So these are the things that we're really good at. And the third thing is digital transformation. So there, in Switzerland, there are a lot of old school companies still, right? Like family run businesses or very old businesses that are in manufacturing or in pharma and healthcare and biotech and so on. And for in order for them to, like, you can't be like, oh, you have all this old tech and now let's do AI. Yeah. Like, there's a huge gap between that. So the first thing you have to do is to transform your applications and your infrastructure to be up to par with the new age digital technologies and then be able to leverage AI. So that's like moving your applications, for example, to the cloud. So leveraging cloud tools and technologies, for example. And for that, like we have like partnered with companies like Doit, which is a big global player that helps various companies move to the cloud and leverage cloud technologies, also AI services that are on the cloud. So these are the things that we also do really well. So it's essentially, that's why we call ourselves, you know, innovation studio, because that's what we try to help companies build their products in that manner.
So it's also part of a, like a consultancy is also part of it,
exactly.
right?
Exactly, yeah.
Because you have to guide the companies through the process.
Yeah, so we do both consulting part of it, but we don't just consult and leave it at that, which is what like a lot of the big fours would do or, you know, these kinds of consulting companies do. But we're also very hands-on with it. And because now I've set up, you know, our engineering and AI teams in India, we're able to leverage that talent in India and offer them really good price to it as well. And because we go AI first, so we also do it very smartly. Like if you want to, you come with an idea, business idea, and you're like, I want to build this. For the prototype, I'm not just going to be like, oh, let's go build like this big fancy thing. Mm-hmm. You can do it these days with low code, no code tools. You can do it with AI tools and technology. And that's where we come in and try to help them out. Mm.
So also very interesting for small businesses that don't have the financial means yet to to go, like you said, all fancy.
Exactly. It's like the goal for us is to, you know, build 80% of the features with less than 90% of what the cost would have been, you know, if you were to build it like full scale.
I love when you talk about it. You're super excited. You're very passionate about it.
Yeah, I do like technology. That's true.
That's amazing. And what is like? What are you most proud of?
At 33 or in general?
Let's start with 33.
At 33, I mean, I would say what we're really good at is like trying to solve complex problems. So now it's, I mean, there were previously other founders at 33, and now it's basically Mike and myself who are partners at 33. And we really like to like go into like new spaces, new challenges. So like recently we've also started looking into how do you leverage AI with virtual reality, for example. And these are all things that I personally, like even blockchain, for example, don't have much clue about virtual reality or blockchain. But every time like there's something new that comes into the picture, like that's something I like to explore on and see like, oh, how do we solve this? So I like solving complex problems as a personality trait. And I think that we did that really well, that over the years, I mean, technology has been changing so rapidly. It's really hard to catch up. You know, and as a CTO, sometimes I'm like, I go into these really like very hardcore, like intense meetings. And I'm like, I feel a bit insecure. Where I'm like, I don't know everything about this. And then I have to like tell myself, I don't need to know everything about this. I will hire people who can know the things that need to be known. I just need to hire the right people who can do this. And I feel really proud about that, that I've been able to achieve that in a smooth way. Obviously there have been bumps on the road and everything, but that we can adapt really well and like foresee what's coming next and try to help our customers in this way. So that's been fun, and I do pat my back for that.
For sure.
Yeah,
you should. And when you look back at your time in the Bay Area and the time here in Switzerland, what is something where you would say, okay, the Swiss startup ecosystem could learn this from the Bay Area and vice versa?
Well, one thing about the Swiss ecosystem in general, I would say, is that now I guess it's changing a bit, but it's a little bit slow. Mm-hmm. So the agility part of things, right? Sometimes I laugh about it. I mean, I don't know if I can say all these things on the episode, but I'll try to say it in an anonymized way. But there are certain big companies in Switzerland that want to become agile, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we're going to get agile coaches and we're going to do agile programs and become agile. And the whole process is so not agile. Of to getting to become agile. Yeah. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, what are you guys talking about? Yeah. So I think there is just this, like, to really harness, like, agility, you know? Like, they say, like, fail fast, like, build fast, fail fast.
Yeah.
This is something that Switzerland could really learn from the U.S. Another thing that generally is a bit lacking in the Swiss startup ecosystem is the risk appetite, also from investors. I mean, the last couple of years has been a bit slim for a startup, like for funding and etc. because of the economic downturn. But generally, because if the investors don't invest into the founders, then they're not going to see more innovation coming out. So if people like complain about, oh, Switzerland's not as innovative or whatever, which I don't fully agree with, because we're doing a lot of very cool things as well when it comes to like biotech, for example, and robotics and so on, because the universities fund that, you know. But when it comes to like startups, if the investors don't put in money freely into the ecosystem, then they're not going to allow and enable startups to like try their ideas and figure out if it works or not and then try the next thing. Because it's the founders, essentially, the ones who are passionate and who have that personality to build things, who will keep building things, even if they fail the first few times. And if you don't support them, then how are they supposed to do that?
Yeah, I think the whole failing culture is not as big here as it is in the US. It's true.
And in the US, I would say that what I like about Swiss people is that they have a lot of integrity and they really focus on quality. So all these cliche things are actually true, the stereotypical things. I really liked that, you know, people, they're not going to try to say something that they're not, or, you know, falsify things or put up a front. So they have a lot of work integrity. They really value quality. I think in the US, many times people would want to cut corners. I mean, there are so many interesting like stories now you can read about, like unicorns that just scaled up like crazy in the US, but they were just hollow companies in the inside. So this kind of like, there is a lot of this culture that is there or was there. I think now like the economy can't support all this anymore. which Switzerland doesn't do. And I think that's really great, because there is this ethical and integral high ground that, that Swiss culture has, which I really value.
Yeah, I think it's great, because you have a, you have such an experience working in both cultures and working also in a similar ecosystem in both cultures. So I think if somebody can say it, it's probably you. So let's look ahead. Let's look a bit into the future. What is, like, for you personally, your the next thing that you want to achieve, but also with 33?
So maybe I'll talk about 33 first. We're really like looking to build more and more cool things with AI. So that's kind of where we're headed with the company. We want to do more innovative projects, possibly also build a product of our own. We're like looking at some things at the moment. And I'm quite excited for that, like to shape the company in this sort of niche area. And I guess that also goes with me personally. Like I like to look at building new things and tackling on the next challenges. So that's what I'm looking at. And also like want to become permanent resident at Switzerland. So that's my goal for this year as well, which I think I will anyway as well achieve that. So yeah, I guess that's what's on my plate at the moment.
I guess we can consider ourselves lucky if that is the case.
Yes. And of course, supporting here now, like... I mean, they're also like friends of mine, like they come to me with ideas, and yeah, I just like to help people, you know, building things. So it just naturally, I think if you just keep doing what you really love to do, then the opportunities just present themselves to you because you have that, first of all, passion towards it, the authenticity and the motivation, dedication needed to do it. So I'm just excited to what, you know, what's to come next. Yeah.
So are we, for sure. And talking about helping other people, I'm sure you have a plethora of tools or resources or cool gadgets that you personally love to use. So I'm very eager to hear what is something that you would recommend to our listeners. Could be books or apps or websites or, Tamagotchis. I don't know. Random. What is something that you would recommend?
Well, I knew that this question was coming, because also I asked this question. We all
did
do.
You?
We asked this question all the interviews. And I have so many recommendations, honestly. I guess I'm just going to list them out. Anyway, they'll be in the description. So
yes,
Cecilia does a good job.
You don't have to take your notebooks out now.
Okay, so in terms of podcasts, a couple of them that I really love to watch, and this is kind of like the chill time, you know, or the weekends or whenever I have free time, I love listening to podcasts. So there's this one, it's called School of Greatness by Lewis Hose. And there's The Diary of a CEO by Stephen Bartlett, which both of them are really great ones. Then for tech, there is BG Too Good, which Mike introduced me to, is really another good one. And there are a couple of also handles that I follow for like Instagram people. There's For Good Code.
Okay.
And AI the Revolution, which is really good for like anything tech related. You want to stay up to speed with like, or for the techies out there who want to know like what's good and what's next in the tech space. These two are really cool. Then I was also thinking, you know, about like books that really shaped my life. I would definitely recommend The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And these are more like in the mindfulness space. And then there's also another one, Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's a neuroscientist that that brings in mindfulness and neuroscience together and talks about that. And then recently I watched documentaries, which I think like people should really watch. And so Netflix is this from Arnold Schwarzenegger. And David Beckham's documentaries, which really influenced me in a positive way, just to see the resilience and persistence of how to reach excellence. And also Naval Ravikant, he writes great articles on you know, how to build wealth and happiness. His book, The Almanac, is also a bestseller, really popular one. These are a few things that definitely I would recommend to check it out if you haven't.
Great. Yeah, we will make sure to have them in the show notes as well. And now we finish up the interview with the rapid fire questions, which you know very well, but you don't get around of not doing them. So I will ask you a few rapid fire questions and you have to answer them directly. So don't think too much.
I will.
Go for it. And because you did not mention an app now, I will actually start with that one. What's your favorite app on your phone?
Wow. Okay. Well, the funny thing is that me being like a tech person, I really don't like to use a lot of app and gadgets because I'm on the laptop like pretty much all the time. So for podcasts and books, it's like, okay, I'm learning stuff. But otherwise, I'm bad with apps. Like, I don't want to download anything. Unless it's like a meditation-related app or something. I guess I would say I don't use it anymore because I do some different meditations. But Headspace is a really good app for, like, starting off with meditation. So that's what I will recommend.
Okay. Or maybe the Do Not Disturb function on your iPhone.
Yes, I love the Do Not Disturb function on the app.
Okay, next question. Dead or alive? Who would you love to interview?
Dead or alive, who would I love to interview? Wow. Okay. I would actually love to interview, well, two people that I can think of, or three people even. Okay, this is not as rapid. But Dr. Joe Dispenza for sure. He's amazing. I went to his advanced like meditation retreat last year and he's a genius. Like the way he talks and everything. I would love to interview him. I would love to interview Meera Murathi, like the CTO of OpenAI. I mean, honestly, in the last 6.5 years, I've only spoken to one other female CTO, apart from myself, who I also talk to. So I would love to interview her, you know, biggest AI company at the moment. And there was this other, again, amazing woman, Neri Oxman. I found her on Netflix. She's a professor at MIT Media Lab. And she's amazing at like bringing together biology, material design. And she builds these beautiful designs, very intricate designs, like combining different, like it's called bioarchitecture, different fields together. And she's brilliant. So yeah, these three people.
Sounds amazing. I would definitely listen.
And they're all living, so it's possible that it happens.
next on your list.
Yeah.
If you would found another startup again, in which industry would you do it?
Okay. Wow. That's a tough one because I have a few ideas like all the time, but I have been thinking about it for a while and I've talked to some people about it. I would want to really do something in the education space.
Cool.
To really bring in more emotional intelligence for children at an early age so that they can navigate their life better later on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really lacking in the current education system. So that's good. Something that I think about a lot. I don't know if I'll do it or not or when, mm-hmm. but that's definitely on my list.
Really cool. Nice. Yeah,
thank you.
Have just two more.
Okay.
I love rapid fire questions. So Silicon Valley, what is it really like in three words?
Okay. Wow. Monotonous. It's like the first word that came to me. Innovative. And sunny.
Mm-hmm. Good. And then I actually have two more questions, actually. Switzerland, the US, or India?
Oh, to choose between. I would say Switzerland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good that you're here.
Yeah.
And then lastly, how often do you meditate and for how long?
Okay, well, on average, because some days it's much more and some days it's less, I would say about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
At a time,
it's an hour. So like morning and evening, basically mm-hmm. an hour each. Mm-hmm. And when I have more time, then it would be a few hours a day. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very inspiring.
Lifesaver.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I know it is personally as well. Yeah. So. I highly recommend if you've not tried it yet.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Ansuya. That was it with my questions.
Thank you, Marley.
It was super interesting. Very
inspiring.
Yeah,
great time talking about everything. So I hope it was not too long.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And I wish you all the best for anything that's coming next.
Thank you. Same to you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.